When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, like Aloe or Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret? With Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whatever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/try to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/try.
Welcome to Sons of a Gun, a podcast about the DC Universe. I'm Alex Gunn.
I'm Justin Gunn. Back from where? I don't know.
And I'm Pete.
Pete Gunn, and we all are sons of a celebrity parent. We can't say who it is for legal reasons, but he is there, and he's doing a great job, whoever he is, with the first two releases out of DC Studios. And this is one of them. We're going to be talking about The Penguin, episode one on HBO and Max. The first episode is titled After Hours. If you haven't watched it yet, go watch it because we are going to spoil it. But as mentioned, this is the first of two big releases from DC Studios. This is part of the Matt Reeves Batman universe, not the DCU, but still, I think, under the purview of our podcast because it goes under the DC Studios logo. It picks up 1 week after the end of The Batman and is following Oz Cobb, played by Colin Farrell, as he works his way up the Gotham underworld, specifically in this episode. Pivoting off of the end of The Batman, Gotham City has been flooded. It's even worse than usual and even more garbage-filled than usual, if you could believe that.
And wet garbage. Everyone's least favorite.
That's the
garbage.
Worst. Yeah.
Yucky.
100%.
Very yucky.
And just to recap this really quickly, after in a fit of rage killing Alberto Falcone, the supposed heir of the Falcone crime empire, a thing that they report on the Gotham News, which is crazy, he tries to hide the body along with his young ward, Victor Aguilar, who he sort of adopts over the course of the episode. They have a little bit of a bond. He also fights is the wrong word, but he gets an adversary in Sophia Falcone, who has returned from Arkham Asylum and really doesn't like Oz and really suspects him of killing Alberto. But due to some...
But also seems to have a connection to him, I think you could say.
Yeah, they're all broken in their way. They've got their broken wings. Uh-huh. They're all flightless birds, if you will.
Maybe those broken pieces fit together, Alex.
Take these broken wings, I always say. And by the end of the episode, thanks to some machinations from Oz with help from Victor, he has probably started a gag war between the Baronis and the Falcones, and they relax with the slush puppy at the end of the episode. And then we hear Dolly Parton, 9 to 5. So good stuff. Before we get into specifics, I know that was a very broad overview of the episode, but what did you think? And I'd love to hear, beyond what you thought of this episode, what you felt about The Batman for anybody who hasn't listened to us talk about that before, because I think there are very strong takes about that movie. So Justin,
you're talking about the Matt Reeves universe Batman.
Exactly. Yes. Exactly.
Okay. All right. But I think Justin, you should go first. You know, it's too bad you don't have Dolly Parton right behind you, because it was
a fun way to end.
Yeah.
For those of you that don't know, I record often in Dollywood, and she's always just lurking right over
just behind you, which is super nice of her.
I mean, in the dark, everybody says in the shadows. That's the thing.
Everybody says how nice she is.
she can't be everywhere at once, but you know somewhere in the shadows is Dolly Parton, and she's going to get you.
Dolly lurks.
Take comfort in that.
That's, yeah. And the other thing to talk about is when Alex says, take these broken wings, as his catchphrase, he has a set of broken angel wings from a costume he had in 2013, and he's always trying to get rid of them, trying to pawn them off on us. And I'll tell you what, Alex, no one's interested in your broken
wings. But this is, good care of them. He cleans them regularly, so
this
it's
is
not
also
like
very rude
wings.
Because Justin knows what he's not saying is we went as a couple's costume, Romeo and Juliet, Baz Luhrmann version. I was Juliet. He was Romeo.
It's very telling
to bring that,
even then, when we did that, that was like 10 years later nostalgia.
It's cool. They did it on Euphoria recently. I'm putting it.
Yeah. Well, even saying the Euphoria recently, where the layers of nostalgia are stunning. Just like my feelings about Matt Reeves, the Batman movie, which sets off this universe that we're now playing in with the Penguin. And compared to all the other Batman projects, I think, you know, the Matt Reeves Batman both was darker in some ways than Nolan, but also less psychologically dense, I would say. It was sort of a little bit mopey, but I think from a plotting point, it was a great detective story. It was like a cool, gritty Batman. And so for this, spinning out of that, this feels like it's in that universe, but it's a completely different direction. And I did like this. I think Colin Farrell's great in general and specifically in this role. But this show, I feel like, is at a weird meeting point between The Sopranos, which it feels like what they're trying to do, and the actual show Gotham that ran for many years on Fox. It's truly right at the intersection of that. And I don't even mean that as a negative. I think it's actually a positive.
Yeah. Pete, what about you? What's your take there?
Well, I didn't like the Batman Matt Reeves movie as much as a lot of other people. But I was really impressed with this. I was pleasantly surprised. I mean, the acting is phenomenal, but the choices that they made with everything that happened and how fast it moves, the fact that we're kind of riding with Penguin and he's a little out of control, like this isn't like a planned Riddler situation. This is him kind of like barely getting by in such a kind of crazy villainous way that it's insane. That whole thing with his mom, she yelling at him, like, oh my God, that was so intense. And I feel bad for Victor. I was like, dude, you should have ran away. Like, this is an insane relationship. It's really impressive, like the way it's shot and everything. So yeah, I had a blast with it.
Sounds like I'm the most positive on the Batman. I love that movie.
It's your fave, right?
Let me clarify about that. I think it is the best on-screen depiction of Batman that feels the closest to Batman. I don't think it's necessarily the best Batman movie, mind you, but things like, and Pete's going to get very upset about this, but like Michael Keaton's Batman is not exactly Batman.
Michael Keaton's Batman is more Michael Keaton than Batman. It's 100%. More Michael Keaton than Batman.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. And Christian Bale.
But just think about it. That was back when.
What about Kevin Conroy, assholes?
Acting
like that never happened?
Live action. That's fair. No, that's a fair point. Kevin Conroy, best Batman by far.
Okay, thank you.
I'm talking about the live
action. So people don't completely hate you, Alex. I mean, you're just spouting nonsense.
By people, you mean you, right? Yes. And keep in mind, Alex is wearing a Batman t-shirt.
I am. But Michael Keaton approached. I have a Batman Lego behind me, so that's super true. Fan here. What do you have behind you? A bunch of fuzz, Pete. Fuzz right. And way too bunch bright lights.
Thank you. Thank you for pointing that out. It's so nice to open up to you and to fucking share with you, you fucking piece of shit.
Okay. Let me just finish because we're just in the introductory part. We haven't even really talked about the Penguin year, and I don't want to get too caught in the Batman of it all. But I was very annoyed going into that movie because I don't think we need an even more serious version of Batman than Nolan. Everything seemed grim and gritty, and that's really not my favorite mode. But from that opening narration on, you know, there's the first scene of the Riddler killing somebody in that movie, and then there's the opening narration where he's talking about Halloween and what I was riffing off earlier, where, like, he can't be everywhere, but they shine the bat signal, and that gives fear to criminals. the slow development of him, the detective story, everything. I thought how it was shot, how it was delivered, absolutely fantastic. I was enthralled by that movie. I've seen it several times since, loved it. This, what I really, really liked about this in particular is this presented purposefully the flip side of that. Like, I think, Justin, you're 100% correct in terms of what they're riffing off of is The Sopranos, and it's just trying to continue that on HBO. But what it is showing is, like, and what I was really struck by is versus that opening narration where Batman is like, I can't be everywhere, but they feel like I'm everywhere. He is a non-factor for the criminal element in Gotham City. And what I think this does so well, as Oz drives around the city, disposing of body parts, terrorizing Victor, visiting his drug business, going to the suburbs to visit the Falcons, is Gotham City is enormous. And you get a sense of that sometimes in shows like Gotham or in the movies where they'll have a, you know, overhead shot of, like, we're zooming over the city, but it always really feels like the GCPD, Wayne Manor, maybe, yeah, you know, the Birds of Prey Tower. Like, there's a couple of locations. This was one of the first times I felt the scope of, oh, Batman literally can't be everywhere, so why would they be worried about him because he is just one guy? And I was very impressed with that, just in terms of, like, a Bat Mythos perspective, but also just in terms of the performances here. Like, we already mentioned Colin Farrell, who is phenomenal in the role. I, you know, we could probably get into the whole fat suit of it all and the problematic nature of that, but it is, he's fantastic as Oz. Like, he was great in the movie. He's great here. On the flip side, Christine Milioti as Sofia Falcone.
Oh, so man.
So good. Like, you were watching this whole thing, you're like, Colin Farrell's really good. And then she comes in and the whole thing just ignites on fire.
Yeah.
So I was
She's the best part.
Yeah.
I also think Victor's really great.
Yeah. He is. This is another thing, like, not to info dump here at the beginning, but that I really took away from here is, and this was the same thing with the Batman, is, like, even though they're bringing it down to ground level, I feel like a lot of times when filmmakers say, we're bringing this down to ground level, it's because they're ashamed of the source material. Like, they don't want to have anything to do with it. They're like, no, this is a realistic take on superheroes. It's not like the comics. And Matt Reeves brought it down to a realistic perspective in the Batman, but kept it consistent with the characters. Like, it felt like the characters of the comic book and the core there, even though they're changing and twisting things. The same thing here, you've got this relationship between Oz and Victor that is 100% straight up evil Batman and Robin. Like, down to Victor is found stealing the tires off of Oz's car, just like how Jason Todd was discovered by Batman and then eventually became Robin. I was like, yeah, they're 100% straight doing this. They're riffing off the stuff. And last thing I'll say, I'll stop monologuing, but, like, Pete, the thing you said about him going absolutely wild and having no plans, that to me is, like, the core of the Penguin, is he'll have these plans and be like, oh, I'm manipulating people and moving back and forth. And the second somebody laughs at him, he's like, that's it, and pulls out his umbrella and starts beating them to death. And he's like, ah, shit, all my plans are ruined. And then he just has to start improvising. And that's what they get here. So, again, just to, like, sum up this part, it really felt consistent with the comics, even at the ground level, even with doing Sopranos. And I was very impressed by that.
Okay, well, just because you slapped me in the face, I got to say something. You know, being mad at Michael Keaton for bringing Michael Keaton to a Batman character is,
I'm
just
not mad,
insane.
Bro. No.
Shut the
I have
fuck
a
up.
Batman
you
return
just monologued for 20 minutes. Shut the fuck up.
I was the one who was saying that, Pete, not Alex. And I was just saying that back then it was like a random movie. It was before anyone really did any of this. So he was like, yeah, I'm Batman. He's like Bruce Wayne. I can do what I want. And then only since then has it become something where it is that you have to approach a certain way.
Anyway,
so it's not an insult. It's just like
I was slapped in the face. I would like to rebuttal. So I'm just saying that, like, the choices that he made with Bruce Wayne is something that we haven't seen a Bruce Wayne like that. I mean, the fact that Kim Basinger is walking around and he's having fun and like doesn't know what the room is magical. It's a nice layer to Bruce Wayne, which, you know, Captain Moper's over here who loves the mopey Batman. It's a lightness that you don't normally see because he's such a tortured soul. But done with the Jack Nicholson Joker makes it all work together in a movie that captured lightning in a bottle. It was unbelievable. So to kind of just say that is a little ridiculous is all I would have liked to have said. Thank you.
Thank you so much for your thoughts on that. Do you have any thoughts on the TV show The Penguin?
Yes, we continue to just kind of talk about how great it is. But yeah, I mean, also the action, like that car sequence was holy shit. I was completely on the edge of my seat for that whole thing. It was such fun twists and turns. And it was just absolutely brilliant. And the showrunner on the show is just making such great choices. This is really impressive.
Great. Thank you, Pete. Let's talk about some of the other cast members here. So Clancy Brown shows up as Salvatore Moroni. I thought that was a great choice.
He's cool.
That scene was very fun. And overall, this is something, I think it was the Entertainment Weekly interview that Matt Reeves did, which I didn't know this. Matt Reeves took a writing class with Jeff Loeb, who wrote The Long Halloween and a bunch of other things. And he expressed that he got some incredible writing advice from Jeff Loeb while taking the writing class. And you can kind of see that here. Like, this is 100% not the same plot. But, like, this is skirting Dark Victory, which was the sequel to Long Halloween. In that book, in The Long Halloween, for anybody who hasn't read it, you 100% should read it because it's fantastic.
Yes.
Long Halloween it deals with this holiday killer who is killing people on holidays. Turns out at the end of the book to be Alberto Falcone. The second book, the sequel, Dark Victory, you have Sophia Falcone has been seemingly paralyzed due to the events of the first book. Alberto Falcone is in prison, and a new killer starts terrorizing Gotham called the Hangman, which is what they call her here in the show. It's not exactly the same way, I think, because she is riffing off of Holiday, and we haven't seen Holiday in this world yet. Also, it's very much about what Alberto did and Alberto being in prison, and of course, Alberto is dead here. But I do think we're going to get down the road some sort of riff on that, which I'm very excited about. So it's Reeves showing his influences. That's all I was going to say.
Yeah, in a good way. And it feels rooted in the comics in a lot of ways. And I think what I was saying before about this show being sort of having some Gotham to it, the sort of very much like we're making so many of these, we don't really have time to do we're just going to bust this through a lot of this stuff. And you can feel a little bit of that in the show. And I mean that in a good way, because it feels more like a comic book when you're just like, you're just moving through stuff. We get our moments of pop, like the scene between Penguin and Sophia, and the two scenes we get, the dinner scene and then the sort of reflexive when she's like about to kill him, basically, until he barely gets out of it.
Yeah.
But like that way, the pacing of it and the sort of like, this scene is about this one thing. Let's do that one thing. Now we're done. Let's move on. It's a nice change up from a lot of the former DC stuff that feels like it's trying, there's just so much weight on everything. And there's a lightness to this that I thought was refreshing in this universe.
One thing that I think is really going to be interesting to see in terms of how this paces out is apparently this was supposed to be the beginning of the Batman Part 2. Like the way that the story goes is Matt Reeves had Oswald's Ascendancy is sort of the first part of the next movie. He was pitching to Casey Bloys, the head of HBO. They were trying to figure out what they could do. It was like a Batman show. And Casey Bloys was like, we should do that. Do that as the show. That's going to be the thing. So it'll be interesting to see, like, to your point about the pacing of the show, does this give them more room? Are they able to fill the room of 8 episodes? Does there feel like any flab on it necessarily if this was just supposed to be like 10 to 20 minutes of a movie, you know? And I don't know at this point. I guess we'll see.
Yeah. It's crazy to think of it like this was 10 minutes and now it's 8 hours.
Yeah.
And if you're wondering if there's going to be any flab, Probably. I would say, yeah. When you blow something up from 10 minutes to 8 hours, maybe everything doesn't have a spot to go in. But I mean, I at least there's no, I didn't feel a lot of flab in this. Mm-hmm. And so that's a good start.
I want to talk about Big Slush Puppy here. I mean, this is just such a huge ad for Slush Puppies. And I got to say, I'm not mad about it because I think they did such a good job of getting universal truth. That is, Suicide Slush Puppy is probably the greatest thing of all time.
Is it? I have never tried it. So you are going to bat for it, Pete?
Yeah, yeah. No doubt.
So you'd recommend it. Can you give us just a diagnostic breakdown of how you would handle this? Are you going, is there a certain order you're dropping in all the different colors? Or is are you really favoring just, one? What's your recipe?
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing that you got to, know what you like, so you always favor that a little bit for your, a little treat for yourself. But I mean, the fun is the mixture that happens.
Is there any truth to the rumors that it's all just the same fluid with different color?
Oh, how dare you? That's just, that's horrible. Horrible.
There are a lot of rumors flying around about that. I heard in the 7th episode of The Penguin, he finds out about that and kills everyone.
Well, that makes sense. I would. So.
Yeah,
Batman. Yeah, it makes sense.
The last person he kills, Alfred, because he's like,
oh, that's crazy.
It was the same. It is all just little goo, and then he kills him.
Yeah. Huh. It makes total sense.
The reason I've never done that is I feel like it just becomes a mush, and then you don't really get any flavors or anything like that, per the point Justin's making, but you feel like you could taste the individual flavors.
Oh, my God, yeah. And the whole... all of it together is just such a lovely combination of delight. I mean, it's just mm-hmm. one
and
of those things, man.
It doesn't feel like
back in the day, you guys never had a snow cone. You had like the guy put all the stuff on there. You know what I mean? Like just go to town on it.
Sure, but that's three different flavors. You eat them individually. This is like it melts quickly, so they all moosh together, right?
Yeah, but it's also like I'm worried about your childhood. Like you guys maybe didn't have...
When I was a kid, a treat for me was just a little maple syrup on a stick.
And a regular stick.
I grew up
right?
on,
not like
I
a
didn't
popsicle
have,
stick.
Yeah. No, I mean a stick from a tree. I grew up on well water, guys.
Let's not forget that.
And Pete, let me just say, if it's not clear from anyone who's listening to this, Pete's like basic. He's just like the most basic dude. He's a basic bitch.
How dare you, sir? I mean, I wear that with honor, but the fact that you're pointing it out is
drinking, I'm sorry to stick with this, but when you're drinking one of those suicide slushies, is that like when you're drinking sand art? You know that sand art you get on the beach with all the different layers? Is it the same sort of thing?
No, it's delicious.
Can you do
it? Absolutely delicious. It's such a fact that they put it in a TV show and ended it on such a sweet note that two people who could have completely different backgrounds can agree that the suicide slushy is just unbelievable.
Well, actually, 2 points that I want to make off of that. One, I thought that last moment was really funny. The reaction of like, come on, it's better.
Yeah,
it's better that way.
Better.
Maybe laugh out loud, going into the 9 to 5, laugh out loud. I didn't expect how funny this show would be. Like there's moments of pretty hilarious levity going from the beginning where he kills Alberto Falcone, sort of maniacally laughs, realizes what he's done and goes, "Fah!" And then the title cuts him off. Funny way to begin it. 9 to 5,
yes.
Funny way of ending it. So I was very impressed by that. The other thing, though, I forgot what I was saying.
It was about a slushy. I'm just guessing.
No, it wasn't.
Is it as bad to kill a brother who's a douchebag?
It was about Victor and Oswald, because I have questions about that. My question specifically that I was wrestling with over the course of the episode, and I do think the episode needs for you to wrestle with this, is Oswald instantly is like, you and me, we're the same. We're the same guy. We're exactly the same. We come from impoverished backgrounds. Certainly, without explicitly stating it out loud, Victor has a very pronounced stutter. Oswald has his club foot, his scarred face, his cleft lip, etc. So I think he's seeing like, we have things that we are struggling with. We are the same guy. Are they the same guy, though? What did you guys take away from it?
Well, yes and no.
Great. If you want to, I no think, further discussion necessary.
Yeah. No, yes and no. Bye. Right. Right.
That's what a podcast is all about. Think asking questions is, and answering with one word.
There is something to the fact of, like, you know what it's like growing up in a similar place, not having shit. So you kind of like, you know, I think there is a commonality there. I don't think they're the exact same. But I do think that they're both people who struggled with stuff and can kind of relate to that. But I think, you know, the Penguin's doing a good job as an evil supervillain, gathering henchmen and, you know, getting a team together.
Just the one, you mean? The one henchman? Henchman?
Well, yeah, one at a time, bro. You got to kind of cultivate this kind of stuff. You know what I mean?
I think you should. When you're hiring, it's nice to have a group, I think. Make it like a class. Everyone,
I don't know. I think it's safer. Like, if you hire a bunch of people at the same time, you're paying a bunch out front, and there's a risk there that you're going to have to lay some people off. In this case, laying them off is shooting them in the head. So he's hiring one, see how that works out, sell like 2 drugs instead of 10 drugs, and then he can kind of work his way up there.
I do think, to getting back to the Sopranos of it all, because I think this issue is in relation to it, it feels like they're taking all of the like psychological nuance of the Sopranos and Tony Soprano, the character, and just boiling it down to like, Oswald felt like an outsider his whole life. He and Vic come from the same background, and I bet they'll explore that a little bit, but it's really taking big ideas and boiling them down to one thing that they can just then, again, just move with. And it feels like there'll be some tension between he and Vic because the one thing we know about them is he's like, we're the same. And I think Vic is eventually going to be like, we're actually not the same, but I saw an opportunity and I didn't want to be killed. So I'm doing this, but I bet there's going to be some sort of betrayal there.
Yeah. I think there's definitely something going on. I will not go as far as the nerd internet has been going. They saw the name Victor and they're like, ooh, is he Victor Freeze? Is he going to be Mr. Freeze? And he is drinking a slushy, which is very cold.
Cold, famously cold.
It's possible.
Yes, Victor Slush. He doesn't get quite as cold.
I'm keeping it dirty.
My girlfriend is sort of cold. I'm waiting for a cure.
She has brain freeze.
Because she's a little chilly. Yeah. Victor Brain Freeze. That's good.
Ooh, that is good.
Also, it could be Victor Saz. You know what I mean?
It could be Victor Saz. He could also be Victor, who is Cyborg. Could be that as well. Or alternately, he could be an original character named Victor Aguilar, who has absolutely nothing to do with that.
That's the fun of it. You don't know.
I don't know. I feel like everybody's brains have been poisoned by Easter eggs at this point, is the reaction that I saw, because I was like, he is a guy. He is a kid. He is a stand-in for this version of Batman and Robin, but that's all he is. He's not going to be like strapping on a cold gun by the end of 8 episodes.
I agree with you. And our brains have been poisoned, but all the TV we watch has never let us pay that off. Like the Mephisto, Reed Richards, none of that. Our brains were broken so long ago, and they're just still broken. It's not like it's getting worse or weirder. I think this is just Victor. But also, we're watching Agatha all along. And it's like, ooh, Nick Scratch. And it's just like, oh, man, Vic Scratch. Now we got Nick Scratch, we got Vic Scratch.
Well, not to compare the two shows, because I think there's worth in both of them. But the thing that I think this show is laudably doing is not that it is trying to tell a story of a character named Oz Cobb and his rise up the underworld. It is delving into his psychology, per what you said, Justin. It is giving him a young ward that he can see himself in, perhaps incorrectly, and it's giving him an adversary in terms of Sophia Falcone, who has already made it to the top of the underworld, and we don't know exactly how, but certainly they're both damaged people that are trying to find their way in this underworld in Gotham City. So I think that's what it's trying to do. Like, that's what it's setting out.
And I like that. And to be sort of Pete's rant, I guess, from earlier, like, it is a little bit of the flip of Batman Returns here, It's taking some of the themes from Batman Returns and using them and showing us the flip side, where the Penguin in Batman Returns was talking about how he's like, he was Bruce Wayne. He had the same situation, but he was just malformed for this world kind of idea. And I think we're getting that a little bit here with Oz being like, we're following the Batman origin a bit here, doing it all at once, but we're getting Robin at the same time. He's sort of becoming the villain he's becoming. But we get that, and it's the flip in that it's not as dark. It's a little bit fun. It's a little bit like just fucking around. It's not as clean and sort of like I fell in a cave and a bat emerged. It's more like, oh, these dudes almost killed me, and then they put a wire in my arm, which was horrible to watch.
Oh, my God. Ugh.
I hated that. That was
awful.
Horrible.
Awful. No, very upset. Really thought he was going to lose an arm.
Yeah, that was... But I think the really scary part was, like, we were getting these things of, like, oh, he's going to go over here, he's going to do this. But as soon as we realized he's visiting his mom, I was like, oh, no, this is going to be really creepy and really fucked up. And it was. And I don't ever want to go back there again, but I know the show is. And, that's also – we talk about it being light, but it was also super dark and really messed up when he went to go visit her.
Oh, this is very much a side thing, but what do you guys feel about changing the name from Oswald Cobblepot to Oz Cobb?
I'm sure that it's cool to do that, but it feels very just like internet speak. I'm like, we have a minute. We can hear the whole name.
Yeah.
But I also think it maybe sets a tone of like, this is going to be kind of what you think, but it's also going to be our own thing.
Mm-hmm. It's going to be shorter. I think Oz is a cool shortening. I think they should have kept Cobblepot because why?
I don't know. It just seems like an unnecessary change. I mean, again, getting back to the internet brain poison, but people have pointed out that I think it's William Cobb is a talent for the Court of Owls. And people are like, that's why they did it. They're setting up Court of Owls in Batman Part 2. And like, maybe, I guess, but also, I don't know. It just
internet said he had an owl tattoo, the brother that got murdered.
Mm.
I mean, owls are like nighttime penguins in a lot of ways. You ever thought about that? The idea
they
that
can
it's
fly,
like,
well, though, so it's
yeah, true. Mm-hmm. How can we get but penguins fly underwater? Think about that. with the way that they're like, oh, Cobb. The only way we can get to Court of Owls is by naming someone Cobb. It's like, what? No one thinks that way. Yeah. No one at any stage thinks that's how we should figure out the plan.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, if they're planting seeds, you know what I mean? If they're like, you knew the whole time.
It doesn't bother me too much because I always spell Cobblepot accidentally with two T's at the end. So I appreciate cutting it off. And simplifying the name, much easier to spell Cobb than Cobblepot. But other than that, I don't know. It doesn't really affect the character.
You put two T's on Cobblepot?
Every single time, accidentally.
Why?
And I don't know.
Because of the two B's. Maybe.
There's nothing you spell incorrectly, Pete.
Oh, there's a ton of things, but that's
what I'm
weird.
Saying. Oh, Cobblepot is.
See, I just wouldn't put two T's
word
on pot.
That everybody should know.
Huh. I always
that's
go
a good
to
way
the,
of thinking about it, actually. Thank you.
Nice. I go to, it's weird. It's cobble pot, what you cook in. You cook your cobbles in a cobble pot. Yeah. I go to my local restaurant and order a cobble pot salad. And this finally makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm. The Oz Cobb is with extra
protein. Oh, that's my favorite.
Extra fish. Extra fish. That makes more sense.
They put a lot of sardines.
They throw a raw fish into your mouth from the kitchen.
Mm-hmm. If you're lucky.
What else? A couple of things to throw out there on the whole Penguin front. We were talking about Danny DeVito's Penguin, and there are actually two Easter eggs in the episode where they have a store that's called Burgess's something or other for Burgess Meredith. Penguin in the 1960s. And there's also a Danny's something for Danny DeVito, which is very cute. Interesting thing that I was actually a little thrown by. And I know they did this because he wasn't available, but recasting John Turturro with Mark Strong as Carmine Falcone, like presumably we're going to get a flashback at some point, and that's why they did it. But that's weird. Those are not complimentary actors at all.
Well, they know they're not going to get Turturro to do something like this. And then what do you do? You can't do an almost Turturro?
I don't know, man. Mark Strong.
What would be worse? I think you go in a different direction to be like, no, this is different.
I guess. They can't get Turturro? deter them?
I
don't think.
You can't. Are you going to pay? You know,
I guess
I'm assuming
he was busy with Severance is probably what happened, but
it could be as simple as that.
Yeah,
but just, I mean, I guess it just if he's it's sort of either in or out, and it sounds like they don't want either. They just want like, oh, we want to do a little flashback with you.
Mm-hmm. Hey, he lives in Brooklyn. You guys should talk to him next time you run.
I should. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll go talk to him.
I saw Kieran Culkin on the street on Friday.
Amazing. Anything else about the episode? I think we've talked through a bunch of stuff here, kind of.
Yeah, a couple things. What do you think the design was with the Penguin secret compartment, that the only way to open it is with a sledgehammer? And it goes back to the lounge. I was like, what? It's a secret compartment. There should be a little button.
Yeah, right under the desk or something like that.
Instead, he smashes it.
It's funny. Dramatic.
Yeah.
Yeah. I will, on that note, throw out there that I'm pretty sure Michael Zegan, who plays Alberto Falcone, going on the flashback front, I'm sure we're going to get like a flashback episode or part of an episode because they're not done with him. I think we'll also see Sophia Falcone in Arkham as well and get a little more answers there about why she's called the Hangman. So there you go.
Also, it seemed like he was limping around for the whole movie, except there was like one shot of him walking in the prison to go visit Falcone there, and he wasn't limping.
Oh, really?
Mm. Yeah.
Hmm. Interesting.
Nice. Kaiser Sose.
Yeah.
I've liked the way the air freshener was used.
Yeah.
As a joke.
Great use of an air freshener. Yeah.
That was very fun. All of the stuff with Victor and Oz, I thought was pretty great. Like just all the stories he was telling, the menace, the way I've never seen this actor before. Renzi Feliz, who plays Victor, was just the entire time like sweat pouring down his face.
Scared out of your mind.
Wide eyed for
and he's like,
minutes.
Oh, you like this air freshener, right? Smells good, right?
Yeah.
Slushies, right? I probably won't murder you.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God.
Great stuff. Anything else?
Play all Any those other scenes with that tension was really impressive.
Yeah. And the meal, too, just to throw out there, like the meal that Sophia and Oz have, I thought was really well done. Man. Just sort of the arc of that scene going from her just jabbing things in her mouth, the whole thing about putting the elbows on the table, the way that they're playing like this psychological chess match the entire time. I thought was very well done, where he thinks he's like won her over to his side and 100% absolutely has not. I think I would venture, this is pure speculation, but even with the thing that they do at the end where Vic sends the car with Alberto's body to the Falcone estate, I do think we're ending up in a mob war between the Falcones and the Baronis because they have to, but I don't think Sophia is fooled. She is too smart for that to not see through what Oz is doing there.
Yeah.
True. Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah.
Yeah, the way she's just playing it. Yeah, it's just, oh, man. Yeah. And that, like, hug, kiss, goodbye thing was so creepy.
Mm-hmm. Great. And by all reports, the show only gets better as it goes along, so I'm very excited to follow it. One last little note that I want to throw out at the end here, which is slightly unrelated, but as I mentioned at the beginning, this is the first of two DC Studios productions. So James Gunn has been posting. He's been very excited about it because they both got really good reviews. So The Penguin came out. But over this past weekend, I went to see Superman, the Christopher Reeve story.
Oh, yes.
Which is a limited documentary about Christopher Reeve and his family, the tragedy that befell him, etc. It only played two times, 4 and 7 p.m. on Saturday. It's playing again on September 25th for Christopher Reeve's birthday. Highly recommend checking it out. The beginning of it, unlike The Penguin, has the full DC Studios logo, which if you don't know, it's the Ruben Fleischer Superman breaking out of the change that it flips to the DC bullet. And it's just, it's perfect. Like, it's absolutely perfection. And then the movie itself, I thought, was phenomenal. I was basically crying off and on for like 2 hours straight, which I know is something that maybe not everybody wants to do in a theater, but I thought it was a really well done documentary that doesn't veer away from some of the more problematic parts of Christopher Reeve. even when he was paralyzed in terms of some ableist comments that he made, which is exactly what a documentary should be doing, but ultimately really delves into the change that he made in the world and more than anything, his wife, Dana Reeve, made in the world as well. It's really almost a movie about her almost more than it is about him, but it's a must see for any DC fan, any Superman fan. There's some funny parts as well. It's not a total slog. If you have a chance to see it on September 25th, highly recommend it. Yes, Pete.
Because I know him and Robin Williams were friends. Is he?
Yes. Robin Williams is a major part of the movie, which...
Oh, man. Now I'm going to cry the whole time.
Yeah. Oh, my God. It's just seeing their two stories parallel. They don't touch on it.
Because they went to college together.
Yeah, they went to college together. The way that Christopher Reeve, not to spoil anything about real life, but the way that Christopher Reeve made it through, they frame it, is like really his relationship with Robin. And the large majority of the movie is made up of footage from movies, home movies. There's interviews with Christopher Reeve's children, but also Glenn Close, Susan Sarandon, Bill Pullman. No, Jeff Daniels. I always confuse them. Jeff Daniels and a couple of others who worked with him. But also
Jeff Daniels and Bill Pullman.
I don't know why I mix them up. It's very weird.
I mean, I hear, like, there's a time where they looked very similarly.
Yeah, but not
their
anymore.
Careers are wildly different.
Yeah, the basic
whatever it
guy.
Is, like, right, it's right. Not like there's the interviews that keep it fluid throughout, but like, it's really, there's so much home movie footage of just Robin Williams and his wife hanging out with Christopher Reeve and his wife, and it's incredible. So, highly recommend checking it out. Just wanted to bring it up at the end here because it is the first two of those productions. But to get back to the Penguin, we will be following the show here on the podcast.
Eight episodes.
So seven more episodes to go. Very exciting times. We are finally into it. We started this podcast a year and change ago with the anticipation of the DCU, and we're finally getting into it. So that's pretty cool. If you'd like to support this podcast and all these podcasts, we do patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. to Facebook and YouTube. Come hang out. We would love to chat with you about the Penguin. Apple, Spotify, Android, or the app of your choice to subscribe, listen, and follow the show at Comic Book Live on Twitter/X, Comic Book Club Live on TikTok and Instagram, comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. And until next time, Dad, you're doing great. The Rotten Tomatoes scores are awesome. Keep going.
Dad, it's like, where are your three victors?
Mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. so you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.